Is it rolling, Bob?
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and germs, freaks and geeks, fellas and bellas, take some time, close your eyes, and transport yourself back. And I'm going to try and key it all off, and we'll see what it sparks in you with the song that set me off on this ramble tonight. Love it or hate it.
Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. One and all to the Dix and Janes podcast, once again, taking advantage of some other podcast that's out there. This is Anthony Marco's Love Hate Things, and I gotta tell you, it was a good episode to start with, reminiscing on special moments of the past, and I like the idea that sometime, while you're doing it, you're in it, you're enjoying it, but there are times in life when you just sort of take a moment to reflect back on something. And it might seem even more precious. Now, Anthony ended this podcast with this song. Stevie Wonder. And there's something very, very special about Stevie Wonder that his songs strike a note, they strike a chord in you that's different from anybody else. And this song, I went on a slew of Stevie Wonder buying, and I don't know how I missed this song in my purchases, but man, thank you, Anthony, for playing this, and apologies to all you listeners out there for me talking over it. I just decided I'm going to keep it on in the background, so actually what you're listening to is Anthony Marco. And the song he's chosen to end his show with, and I'm using that to begin my show with. I kind of like that. Speaking of podcasts, it's been a week of culture for me and activities. I'm going to open up my MacBook or my iPad here and drag you through my week. If you'll forgive my indulgence, my usual job, of course, and so on. I guess it started, I'll go back to arbitrarily Monday the 15th. That was exactly a week ago. Sean Joyner was in town, and we arranged to meet up at the Only Cafe. I think I mentioned that. And it was just fine to catch up on another podcaster. And Mark and Mo from Victoria were also there, showed up, and we all chatted together. And, of course, they did Baba's Beach, which was quite wonderful. Hasn't been out for a while, but Maureen is an unbelievably good storyteller and has a way with words that puts the rest of us to shame. Not that she's competing, just she's very, very good at it. And anyway, that was kind of a fun night, you know, and here you are, you're at the bar, you're at the Only Cafe, and you're just catching up and grateful for the friends you have simply as a result of joining the podcasting community. Okay, that's where that story starts and stops. The next day, a mediation for a young man I wasn't too happy about. Oh, but from a family that just had nothing but trouble. And you figure, what options does a kid have when they grow up in a very, very, very tough environment? And so you try and give them a break and see if things can get straightened out. And sometimes you almost feel like the cards have been dealt and that's his hand and it's never going to be easy. And it makes you think of how lucky you are and how much you owe your own children to give them the best life that you can. That was Tuesday. Thursday, went to the movie Bedtime Stories at our local little theater here in Scarborough. It's just absolutely wonderful that they have community theater. And she was saying this is like half the price or a third the price of anything you go downtown to see at the big shows. And really good quality. Now, this particular show is called Bedtime Stories by Norm Foster, a famous Canadian playwright, at least so I'm told. And it was a series of six little vignettes, six short stories that all connected together, all setting place in a bedroom, a hotel room, somebody's bedroom. And it was quite clever the way they tied together. And fun to go out and see a little bit of local theater. Friday night, I mentioned I was drunk and I was at the Consul General's house for another week or another evening of drinking and exchanging and meeting people and reflecting on how wonderful it was to be connected, to be part of another society that I have a place in, you know. And all this is sort of as a result of coming back to Toronto from Japan and starting a new life here as a married man and a father. And the week goes on. Saturday night was an all-night drinker with Brian all evening. He bought tickets for the Art Gallery of Ontario, and there's a very special show. Frida and Diego, Passion, Politics, and Painting, an opening exhibit, which was fabulous. These things are pricey. These tickets were $25 a piece on top of his membership. But, man, it was a great exhibit of two people who were fueled by Marxist politics, you know, for Mexico. But Diego was over there in the early part of the 20th century, over in France and studying with the Cubists, and went through these many, many different styles of art. And there's a couple, like a painting by Cézanne, which are just fabulous. One called The Mathematician. I had not been inside the Art Gallery of Ontario, the AGO on Dundas, since it had been completely revitalized and changed and spruced up. And it is gorgeous. Well, well worth a visit. And very kind of my friend Brian to treat me to that. And, of course, that just led to a walk around downtown Toronto. We visited nine pubs. We only drank in five, but we put our heads into nine different bars looking for just the right thing, and had an evening of just sharing stories. And we spent a lot of time talking about teaching. And then last night, the 21st, Sunday, so here's the week, I went to see Wintersleep and Elliot Brood at the music hall on Danforth, right at Broadview. And wonderful. I paid for, a seating section upstairs to watch a show in comfort from seats that were a little bit cramped, but still, they were seats. And it was very, very nice. I ate a brownie beforehand. And God damn, that's a nice way to get high. You just sit and you're tuned into the music, but between the sets, your mind is free to wander, and sometimes even during the songs, you come up with ideas and thoughts, and you feel good. Tomorrow night, or Tuesday, off for another Canada Japan Society board meeting, talk about plans, and on it goes, and on it goes. So, a busy boy, and oh my God, forgive me, how fucking boring was that? Look what I did. So I might have to cut this entire sequence. Fast forward, zap through it, maybe speed it up, double time or something. But I am. Apologies for that. Today marks the 50th anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis. I guess the particular day, maybe when Kennedy called Khrushchev's bluff. And I do remember it. 50 years ago, I would have been a 14-year-old boy, and this was stuff, you know, just beginning to high school. Hey, what's happening here? All this talk about communism and missiles and Cuba and American politics and air raid sirens and warnings on our radio and people building bomb shelters like my Uncle Dan. What's going on? And a time of great tension in the world and you know, belief that, ooh, something bad could happen here. We could be entering one of those nuclear wars they've been warning us all about. Anyway, that we survived it, and here we are now in the year 2012. And the world looks pretty ugly in a lot of horrible ways, and yet I think it's almost like it's almost this pendulum swing of it has to get so bad with the banks having so much goddamn power, the banks and the multinational corporations trying to take control of the earth in their evil ways. And there is a rising up of voice, the art of the revolution, the 99%, the voices of more people saying, hey, stop it. Stop joining that game. Seize control. Revolution is in the air. And, oh, God, I'm such a scaredy cat because I don't want blood. And I don't want all sides fighting each other and innocent people being hurt. And yet, how do we combat this machine? And you look at all the pictures of the future, all the movies, and you just see this. They portray this brutal future of control in the hands of the bad guys. And you keep thinking, yeah, that's where we're heading. Unless we keep the internet free. Now, I'm going to switch tunes here entirely. Started off with Anthony. And wanted to talk about last night, listened on the way home after this concert, feeling good on the subway, listened to Melinda's Maryland podcast. And this is one that really deserves a lot of credit. And I think this was just a reissue, a best of perhaps, an unbelievable, really good professional. This is Melinda, formerly Melinda Mason, now married, who I had a great time hanging out with at pod camps when they were back in London, or back in Kingston. The most fun, playing with her and pretending we were trying to break into the A-list group. Like, we weren't there, but if we posed in enough pictures, if we hung out together and smiled, we could try and crash the right tables. And we just made such a game of it. I might add, you're probably not listening to this. We always got high together, which was just beautiful. As soon as you arrive, hey, let's go have a toke and get back in on there and see what's happening. And, you know, I got to tell you, that's been a part of my pod camps, my certainly PAB experiences. I've been to all of them high. And it isn't a reflection on PAB, it's just saying, hey, that's the way I like to roll. Now, I wanted to tell you that it was a great quality podcast, because I believe there's a renaissance happening in podcasting. I believe Anthony Marco is one of the driving forces right now, with the number of shows that he's putting out of excellent quality. You look at Discultured, Love-Hate Things, and now Best Episode Ever, which is taken off, that he's got a new panelist. It's a new season. And what's hilarious is they're talking about seasons of television. And yet, really what we're experiencing is a season of podcasting. He has got Dave Brobeck and Bob Goyetch, two of my favorite people, on that show. And the last one where they talked about cartoons, advertising cartoons, and another war series, Baba Black Sheep, which I don't remember. Most of the shows they talk about from the 70s and 80s when they were younger, I don't know. I wasn't watching TV in the 70s and 80s. In the 70s, I was out in Vancouver and traveling around and didn't even own a TV. I was just doing things, getting high, getting drunk, and traveling. Missed it altogether. In the 80s, I was in Japan, most of it. So all the TV they make references to. And plus, I was already grown up at that point. My childhood time was, Captain Kangaroo. I mean, I'm pre-Sesame Street. So the references from when they go back, and they'll go back and make a further reference into the past to Front Page Challenge or, Hollywood Squares or something, which my mother watched. Now I can grab those references. The obscure references I get, but the others. Anyway, I was raking the leaves and put this on, and I was just floored. It was the most enjoyable podcast to listen to. It was the most wonderful time, a fall day, sun shining, raking up bag after bag of leaves, listening to three grown men talking about their childhood. And this This is the revelation I had last night at the Elliott Brood concert, that what could be more special than three very intelligent men? Here we are, Anthony, a teacher, a union rep, an educated man who is brilliant. He's bright and he's fast and he's quick and he's talented. He's just got a lot going for him. Bob Goyach, holy fuck, an IBM executive, pardon me, Bob. One of the pioneers in Canadian broadcasting from the Bob and AJ show, and the man who was the other half of Mark Blevis putting together the PAB conference, and our very own beloved Dr. Dave Broadbeck, psych professor who podcasts all his lectures, and just a character, a madman, somebody you just feel your life is just so much richer for, just for knowing. And when I think of these three men that I've had the honor of sitting with them, drinking beer, talking, sometimes even sharing the stage with them, holy fuck, what a gift, what a richness. And this brings back this balance in life when we think we are taken over by the crap that's on TV, by the corporations, by the things we're fed, and you have this other movement of three people that outside this circle, outside this little fishbowl, lots of people don't know Bob Goyach or Anthony Marco or Dave Broadbeck. Never heard of them. They're not famous. They're not on television. And yet those of us in the circle, those of us in the know, I know and love these people. This is the world we're creating. This is the new relativity. This is the new way to share and enjoy and enrich and take control of your life, your knife too. Take control of what you're consuming. And believe me, boys and girls, podcasts are making a comeback. This is, mark my words, we are on a renaissance right now. And people are going to realize, hey, I mentioned before this little podcast artifacts page on Facebook, talking about whatever happened to the old people and who's still out there. And there's sort of a rekindling of warmth from the beginning, the pioneer days of who did what and had what and who's still going. And now with the amount of wonderful new podcasts that are out there, gee, I say that and I can't tell you any of them. No, I'm talking about the old-timers who have come back. I'm talking about the great shows that are out there that you can pick and choose and love. And I guess I'll stop there. I've blabbed enough. I just want to say how refreshing, how wonderful that was to listen to those gentlemen reminisce about their childhood. Something quite hilarious for each one of them. And each one with their own perspective. Dave obviously is a very bright guy listening and watching cartoons with his brother. Bob, a francophone in an anglophone environment in school, talking about a show and tell day and him bringing up one of these, masterful cartoon shows, a series. Big argument, of course, going online whether Snagglepuss was gay or not. I maintain he's not, but if you're going to look anywhere, look at Yogi and Boo Boo. My God. What a pathetic cartoon that was, Yogi Bear, and how we watched that, because there was nothing else. I guess kids will love anything, but listen, Rocky and Bullwinkle, that was real cartooning. Snagglepuss, exit, stage left. Now, Dave is the master of impersonations, of course. Just wonderful stuff. Gosh, so what did I do? Did I just share what Anthony was sharing? Did I just do what he was doing, that talk about, hey, think back to a special time in your life? Well, I'm thinking back to a couple of days ago when I listened to those gentlemen on Best Episode Ever. Thank you. I'm going to end there. My God, how I've gone on a way that I shouldn't, because I got a day to get on with. I only came down to Bluffers Park here so I could have a little nap because I was up at early, had to stay up late to watch The Walking Dead as they take over the prison. Oh, my God. And then get up early to get my son to school on a night again when he didn't sleep at all, facing midterms exams. And I'm telling you the pain I felt this morning for that poor young man, my son. How I love him and how I just felt. I just wish I could have done more for him on a day when he's going in to write tests on no sleep and just fueled by frustration and even anger. And just so, so sorry about that. Life when you can't fix everything. All right, we're done. 20 minutes, we're out of here. I'm going back home to get started on my day. Take care, and welcome to Dixon Jane's podcast number 371. Bye for now. Once again, the pitter-patter, there we are, of autumn raindrops. It's lovely. Here we are, Bluffers Park, on a Tuesday morning, my day off. Of course, it is a marking day, but I drove my son to school. He's a 9:30 start. Drove him in, and gosh, golly gee, my reference point for parenting is my parents, you know, and how I reacted with them, to them, treated them, how they treated me. And it is so different now, and it's very hard to get rid of that thing. Like, I always, there's a tape that continually gets played in the back of my head. I don't say it, but I hear it. My God, I wouldn't have talked to my father that way. Oh, my God, I would never speak to my father like that. Now, that's just simply old school. I guess that's the way it was done, you know. The roles were a little more formalized. And the way both my kids talk to me, you know, I'm a Rodney Dangerfield. I don't get no respect from no one. It's just amazing. And it sometimes takes getting used to. And yet I know what the alternatives are if they just sort of totally ignore me because, well, I'm the dad, so tune them out, and this is, you know, this is as far as any kind of dialogue goes. Number two son loves to argue. I'm not ready for it first thing in the morning, and he'll come up with some provocative statement intentionally, hoping, you know, to get a rise out of me, and he sometimes does, and then he gets angry at me when I dismiss it or shut him down on the point or whatever, and it leads to kind of an exhaust, and I just said, look, I'm just too old to argue. I don't feel like it anymore. And then his sort of reaction is, geez, you know, you can't even have a conversation with you. And I'm like, holy fuck, what did I do wrong now? It is hard. It is very hard, and especially when you're dealing with somebody who has mood swings and is affected by the, you know, amount of sleep he's had, protein in his diet, I don't know what else. I'm not belittling my son here. My heaven forbid, you know, he may listen to this someday and find out who was his dad. I think he suspects me of having very conservative political views, and I would think that anybody listening to the Dixon Jane's podcast would find that that's not exactly the case. But who knows? Anyway, I wanted to say something. First of all, if you listen to the last podcast, 370, or if you haven't listened to it, this is even better. If you have not listened to it, don't bother. I think it was just kind of a boring. And I think I'm moving more into the overall field of, oh, my God, same old, that Scarborough dude. You know, I'll skip five shows, come back, see if there's something new. Oop, nope, nothing new on this one. Maybe I'll just stop listening and find somebody else. And I know I say things like this often. You think, oh, my God, here he goes again, false humility. No, I'm saying I haven't got a lot of new, fresh stuff and fresh ideas. And one of the problems I have, and I hang on, so I'm not saying this is going to be a bad show. It might be one of my best, for fuck's sake. What I'm saying is I have a problem with the present in that I seem to be in it all the time. And I know this is what you want to do with your life, but back in 1975, the fall, I moved to Toronto for the first time, got a little house on Markham, a room in an old Italian house on Markham, just below Bloor, you know, not in the area of Honest Ed's. Loved it, could see the newly constructed CN Tower out my window in the distance. And sat down to write a book, my book. I decided that summer, this was my Yukon summer, this was the best fucking summer bar none in my life ever. 2 months on the railway, Prince George, 2 months up in Whitehorse and Anchorage and Alaska and Dawson City and Carcross and the Chilkoot Trail and drunk 7 days a week. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. What? We're not talking about that now. We've talked about that before. I sat down to write because I needed a purpose to my existence, and I was going to be a writer. I was going to write that first book, and it's so juvenile now. What was I, 1975, 27 years old. It's kind of embarrassing to think that, but I didn't fit anywhere, and I needed some definition. Who am I as a man? Why do I exist on this planet? What is my role here? I don't seem to fit anywhere else, so I'll be a writer. And found it was very, very hard to do, and gave up. Fortunately for me, didn't invest a whole lot of time. I gave up the first day. Day one, well, that's not going to work. One of the problems was I could never get out of the present moment. Like, I was always here. And if I look back at the pages and pages of writings that I've collected, the other false starts, they always get caught up in the present, when I'm really trying to talk about the past. And the same thing is happening on the Dixon Janes podcast, that I really want to talk about Nigeria. I got a lot of stories. It's 30 years ago now that I hit it off. More, you know, there are 30 since I left. I got a lot of stories there, and they're real. And when I think back on it, holy fuck, is that right? Yeah. It was talk about altered states, you know, and different realities. Man, living in a bush village for 2 years in this wonderful old house, with no glass on the windows and full of bugs and insects. And oh my gosh, what a different life. Eating chop every day, you know. Oh man, wonderful. Now, one story that did stand out, and I have mentioned it on this podcast before, but none of you will remember, was I was on my way to a doctor's house. There was a party going on. I think a new doctor had arrived from the Philippines, or an old doctor was leaving. But where I lived, the villagers, there were three villages, Jatu and Afoa, where I was, and I can't remember the other one. Anyway, they gave a triangle of land to the missionary, and they built a hospital, a church, and a school. And so the hospital was a rallying point, its center, and they had the odd British doctor would come out, and the Sisters of Notre Dame ran the hospital. Sister Annette was the head nurse and was wonderful. And they fought to get medicines and everything else, and they gave free service to the poor people, and it was great. And it was, you know, nice to have a hospital nearby. I never had to use it, fortunately. Anyway, there was always doctors there. I even asked at one point, I asked the sisters if I could watch an operation, and they allowed me to observe a cesarean birth. And oh my God, was that gruesome. To watch a man take a scalpel and slice through the 7 layers of skin to get to the womb. I had to step out of the room at one point. Anyway, these are some of the experiences I was fortunate enough to have. Walking, they invited me. Well, Ken, you come visit. We're having this special party for the doctors. And I've always had this thing in my life that doctors are better than me. They're another class of person, almost like an alien species that I really don't mix with, that they're smarter, there's something about doctors that I don't belong with them. And it's always been an issue, and I think it still is. You know, there's this distance between me and doctors. I don't know why, but excuse me. Anyway, I'm on my way. I figured, all right, you got to go to the party. And there's a part of me holding back. Well, I don't really belong there. I'm not a doctor. I'm just a stupid teacher with a BA. You know, I'm not even a good teacher at that. I don't belong. But I said, no, it's going to be fun. There's going to be drinks. There's going to be food. You're gonna. It's going to be fun and lively. Of course, go. You're the only other white man in the village. Of course you're going to the doctor's party with the Filipinos and the Brits and so on. And inside the little compound that the doctors had fenced off. I lived open in the village. They were in a little fenced compound for security reasons. And I start walking there, and I'm going to go. I push myself. And I come to this little... We didn't have paved roads in towards my house. They were just muddy, rutted roads that taxis would joggle their way down. And I'm just about to cross the road that gets you into the school compound, and across, that gets you to another street if you cut through the school, and that gets you onto the doctor's compound. And just as I'm coming, there's a Peugeot 404 comes by. I can even see it and see the colors, the two-tone, sort of a yellow and green. And it's coming, and the headlights shine at me, and I stop because I'm going to let this car pass. And as I stopped, I change my mind. I'm not going to the party. And had that taxi not come down past me, intersected my path at that point, I simply would have kept on walking. I would have gone to the party. And I didn't go. And of course, the next day, Ken, why didn't you show up? It was a great party. And I'm thinking, I went back to my house, like, God damn it, why didn't I go to this party? And vowed afterwards, I will never let a pair of headlights deter me from my path. And the meaning, of course, is something as trivial, as insignificant, as minor, which really had no bearing. All I had to do is wait for the car to go, continue on my walk, and go. But instead, I stopped just long enough by one outside, irrelevant, insignificant factor. A car's headlights made me change my path. And I really thought, okay, boom, if there's anything, there's a lesson learned here. If you're determined to do something, you do it, you stick to it, and you don't let little things. Now that I'm old and wise and have learned more lessons, I'm thinking maybe it was meant to be. Maybe that car's headlight saved me from some other path I would have launched on, because who knows if my life would have been different had I gone to that party. So now, suddenly that I've told you this story I was aching to tell you, I don't know if it survives the test of time. Anyway, that's just one little instance of my time in Nigeria. I did survive on local bushmeat and pounded yam, and I got into it. And I've likened this, I'll say it again. I said it to Brian's the last time I saw him. It was like an acid trip. The entire two-year experience was just like being on acid the whole time, because everything was just so weird and so different, and you're just... You were processing all information in a new way. There was nothing the same. I can't say that's the same as my time in Japan. Yes, it was different. It was more of a mental trip of, oh, gee, the Japanese culture is this way. You think about this. This would be impolite. This person is being so polite to me, it's almost insulting. You're continually thinking and trying to shift your levels. You know, it's a proverbial onion. You keep peeling, and there's another layer and another layer and another layer. And so you're... It was more of an intellectual trip the time in Japan, whereas Nigeria was just an assault on all the senses. And for that, I am just so eternally grateful to the Canadian government and CETA and CUSO and volunteers and somebody down the line who just sort of thought this would be a good idea to have something like the American Peace Corps to send people overseas to help a developing country. But really, I didn't help Nigeria. Nigeria helped me, and there's no other way around it. So there you go. I've managed to fit in a little bit of a story. There was a lot more, and not just Nigeria, but other ones. And the point being, I've got to make more of an effort on the Dixon James podcast to dig back into the past a little bit, because I have led a rich and varied life. And I think sometimes it doesn't show up on this podcast at all. Just some boring old guy living in the suburbs, rambling on about the beauty of Bluffers Park and so on. And ho-hum, indeed. So I guess I'll stop right there, because I'm afraid I'll get back into the present and start telling you something or other, how nice the leaves look stuck onto the windshield of my car, etc., etc. Thank you, boys and girls, and carry on. I'll be back to you real soon with another story from the past. Yes, indeed. I had another new segment, too, the other night, but I had lots of thoughts when I was at that concert, but I can't remember what they were now, so I'll have to see them a little later. Bye for now. Chick. I hope this wind noise isn't too distracting for you. It's a fall noise, so it belongs here. It's a beautiful breeze. I cannot believe this is one of those bonus days. It's Friday morning, just after 10. I'm in Bluffers Park. I've got a class at 12:30. And I had some things to do, go to the bank, try and get Japanese yen for my wife, who's leaving Sunday for Japan, and they didn't have any. And then I thought, well, I could pay some bills, I could do some marking, or I could go to Bluffers Park and do a podcast, and that's what you're getting now. You know, and now that I'm here, I think, man, well, man, how could you have made any other decision? It's rare to get these days, and we're heading the weather forecast. We got storms coming. We got rain. We got snow on the way. Who knows? And to have this little glimmer, and the leaves are still bright and yellow, like the trees are falling. But I was in the cat section where I normally park, and sitting on my usual bench at the little inlet and looking over. Oh, okay, it's nice. I'll sit here. And then I thought, you know, I looked over and I saw one clump of trees. I'm right beside them now. I looked over in the distance. You're sort of looking across this inlet. And it's a different parking lot altogether. I'm going there. I mean, the yellow just called out to me. Tall, beautiful trees with these yellow, bright yellow leaves and the sun beaming on them. It was such a nice thing to see. And it was so nice to be able to go with what called me, you know. And these are the things in life, you know, it's sometimes hard to explain these little things that I believe you have to do. And it's just a little bit of freedom, like, yeah, I want to sit over there, like a little kid, you know. That's the thing you're taught as an adult, to continually restrict yourself. Well, don't do that, you can't do that, you got to do this. And you've got to fight back. You've got to push back. Well, fuck you. I don't have to do any goddamn fucking marking today. I'm not being paid for that right now. I'll do it later. I don't need to do my fucking banking. The bills aren't due until November. You know? Come outside. It's beautiful. It's sunny. Feel the warmth of the sun on your face. Look out at Lake Ontario. Look at the sun shining. It just becomes bright silver, and you can't even stare at it because it's blinding. It's so beautiful. And look at these yellow leaves and listen to them and shuffle your feet in them, you know? It's fall, the best season going. How many falls you got left, man? It's a finite number. You could count them, you know? Maybe just the ones left on all your 20 digits. Who knows? But anyway, not to be morbid, this is to celebrate. Oh, a ladybug on my fly. Isn't that funny? Come on now, go. Some of them bite. There's some. It used to be a beautiful thing to see as a kid. Oh, a ladybug. Isn't that nice? And then a new species invaded our territory. And they bite. Whoop, 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 whoop. Now he's on my coat. All right, I'm not going to. He's boy. He wants to be with me. Anyway, I got to tell you a few things. I need a new iMac. I've been holding off, you know, upgrading. I've got my old MacBook, the black one, that's just, you know, the keyboard's not working, and it's time. And I thought, why not? I don't need to carry it around anymore. I got my iPad for portability. I got my iPhone now. iPhone 5, thank you. Which I'm warming up to, but as a phone, it still sucks. I don't like it, you know. And it's nice. Yeah, I like it. I like reading. I love the screen. I mean, it's so clear. I can read the fine print. I love using it just for, you know, Twitter. It's great for that. But time to replace the main computer. And when I followed it live, the whole iPod, or the whole, the new Mac Mini review and everything else that was coming out. No, I don't need a Mac Mini, thank you. Although my wife probably would have appreciated it more than the new iPad, but not the newest iPad that I got her. But anyway, that's not in the market. Although she told me they were selling for 800 yen, like that's about less than 10 bucks in Japan, iPad 2s to get rid of them. They didn't have the space anymore. And she said, do you want me to get a couple? And I said, yeah, if you could find them. But there's no way, you know, once that word gets out, she heard this that morning, an announcement on her Japanese radio. I said, there's no way those are going to last when the word gets out with all the gaijin, the foreigners in Japan. I'll find out you can get an iPad for $10. No, there won't be any left. Forget it. Don't even bother looking. But anyway, the new iMac came out, razor thin. And my first thought was, well, yeah, it's thin, it's neat, but god damn it, I was really disappointed. There's no DVD drive anymore. Well, I like to rip CDs. I like to buy a CD of music that I can give to my son or share or carry in the car. And then just rip it, you know, and play it on my portable devices. I've kept my iPad and my iPod. Yes, I have an iPad, an iPod, an iPhone, a MacBook, and I'm getting an iMac. Yes, I've contributed to Apple's success since they first came out. I still have my Mac Classic, 1985, I believe, somewhere in there. Maybe I got it the second time around, I don't know. Maybe 87. Anyway, where were we? Yes, so I was really disappointed. Shit, they got that out. Fuck, they're ripping me off. Now I'm going to have to buy a separate drive for it, you know, for another 80 bucks. And I was just annoyed. No, and I decided I'm going to go back to Best Buy, and I'm going to look for last year's iMac and get that instead. And it's got the DVD drive, and it's fast enough for me. I don't need anything big. And, of course, initially, I'm going to get that big fucking 27-inch. Well, I don't need to. I have a giant TV screen, thank you. I don't need a giant screen. 21.5, that'll do just fine. So I went to Best Buy, looked at them, and my first reaction, holy fuck, is this thing ever thick? It's too thick. I want the thin one. And like I was, because the day before I was cursing on Twitter. Who cares about a fucking thin? It's a desktop computer. Why, you know? What's the big deal? That's your selling feature? It's thinner? Now I'm thinking, yeah, I kind of like the thinner one. So anyway, sorry. I guess this is the Mac corner. But I've always been. You may as well know that now, man. This Mac has changed my life. Apple changed my life. Apple got me the fucking house I have. True story. I walked up to the president of my company with an A4 size sheet of paper that I had used Mac Draw. Yes, a program called Mac Draw to show a company. I drew a circle in the middle. It was going to be Kyrenia, Canada. And then I drew all these spokes and arrows, very cool, printed on a laser printer, coming out, and all the various spin-offs that this company could create. The language school, the study tours, the cultural exchange, the library, the information, the teacher training, all these little spokes that went around it, each one in a little circle. Handed that to the president of my company instead of giving him like a 20-page business plan, because he doesn't like to read or didn't like to read that kind of shit. And he said, yep, And he signed off. I got a lawyer, and I got the papers drawn up, and I got him to sign. I got his secretary, who happened to be his mistress, to sign off on it. And bam, I got a company, and I got bankrolls. And that got me the house I've got in Scarborough. Mac Draw. Thank you very much, Apple. So the money that I've made through this business is more than ever. Plus, I've got money I can't take out of my business account anyway because I'm not paying myself a salary, but this is a legitimate business expense. So all the money I make on my summer tours, I buy Mac stuff with. So there you go. Sorry, I just had to share that. It seemed very important. It's kind of funny. So I'm excited. It'll be out in October or November, and I'm getting one. Now, what is kind of funny is yesterday in the newspaper, the Toronto Star, Thursday, October 25th, that was yesterday, they had a new supplement called Luxury, L-U-X-U-R-Y. Everything you need to get there in style, leading the high life. And it's got a woman in a stable with a horse. And it made me puke. I thought, are you fucking serious? In this day and age, what kind of people want to be like Donald fucking Trump, the asshole? Throw the bastard in jail. Well, not unless he's done something wrong. I don't like Garth Drabinski is getting out. And these are guys, the rich white-collar criminals who bankrupt companies, spend all the money, live a high life, keep their house, sell their assets to their children or grandmother or wife, and then claim poverty or bankruptcy and walk away after soft time in a soft jail. I hate that. Any that kind of thing, that's injustice. It really is. Anyway, this thing, I cannot believe. So forget what I said about me wanting the newest Apple gear. That's reasonable. That's for work. Glamour among the giants of fashion. My appetite for life in the fast lane, showing a Bentley and the Bugatti, the $2 million car. And maybe some people like to dream. Shame on you. If I won $5 million, I'm not going to suddenly be Mr. I'm going to buy nicer clothes, I can tell you that. I'm going to have, like, canary yellow jackets and stuff, because I'd like to go wild in the clothing department. But, you know, here we are, living the high life at 40,000 feet, converting a plane to offer a businessman all his conveniences, private jets. And I guess it just shocks me that the state of the world right now, you could put this out, and people would say, yeah, that's what I want. I want to be rich like them, too. It's dead. Capitalism is, this is the end, folks. This ain't going to sustain itself. And they got a whole page on watches. You are what you watch. They're on your wrist to keep time and show the world your true status. Oh, my God. They're serious, though. They're serious. There's a whole page of these watches that, you know, ooh, there's a cheap one. That's $1,250. That's amazing. Only $3,500, or is that? Yeah, well, it's got a black leather strap. Well, these are cheap. You know, who's going to complain about those things? The secret agent, $6,500. This is a little better. Now we've got 14,000 Holt Renfrew, you know? And I don't know. I just had to share that with you because maybe as I get older, and maybe, you know, who knows, my son might even think, oh, that's cool. Not my number one son, my number two son might. But we're all different, and I don't know. When I read, you know, I'm here reading Timothy Leary. I wanted to read a little piece right now. If I can pull it out of my pocket, hang on. On what he was saying, Timothy Leary, as you know, ran to be governor of California. Didn't make it, of course, up against Ronald Reagan. The police were just harassing him, and he was tossed into jail eventually and didn't get it. He talks about the first time he saw California. 30 years later, ethology, which I've never heard of, ethology, and sociobiology. Now, I read those terms, and I think sometimes Dave Brodbeck listens to this show, and I don't think Dave Brodbeck would be a huge fan, necessarily, of Timothy Leary, except for the fact that Leary was a rebel, and Dave would give him credit for that. But in terms of his, you know, his philosophy, his outlook, his studies. Although, come on now, he worked. He gave LSD to prisoners. Give him credit for that. And to priests and others to say, hey, is it, you know, is this a religious experience or what? And the studies they did before Harvard shut him down said that they were making great progress. The inmates love this stuff. They were changing. They were seeing the light. 30 years later, Ethology, because after the first time he saw California in 1946, helped us understand the importance of neurogeography. So Leary was onto all these new things. Where you are determines which circuits of your brain are activated. Where you are determines which circuits of the brain are activated. And so he talks about when he got to California, he knew, exclamation mark, this is the place, we've arrived at the right ecological niche. And that's the way he's felt about California. And every time he goes back east, as time traveler, Red Cross mission, zooming back to Washington, D.C., or the seething warrens of the giddy oriental masses in New York, every time I would visit the hive city of Manhattan, I saw it like a trip down into the Soviet Union, smuggling hope and the sunny message of the far west. So I love that, you know, his way. He was a Californian. He was just saying they were just so far further advanced and evolved on the West Coast than they were east. That traveling east, he always made that joke about it. It was like going back in time. And, of course, you can imagine how many people that annoyed. But I connected that to this yellow trees that I'm sitting under. As I looked, I was sat on my bench and saw the glory of these yellow trees and said, man, you can go over there. Not only that, you've got to take a walk, and you need exercise and fresh air on this glorious fall day, so you're in the right place. And maybe this is why I always do podcasts, and I talk about that. I've mentioned that before without the reference to Leary, that I can't podcast from my office or sitting at my computer screen. I'm just not in a pleasant environment. Coming out to Bluffers Park, where I do probably 80% of my podcasts, gives me a completely different perspective of the world and a different understanding. On that note, perspective of the world, census data released, you know, what, 190 languages spoken in Canada, just this rise of Tagalog and Punjabi and Mandarin, and it makes you feel more and more, especially here in Scarborough, as old white men like myself, my buddy Brian, is definitely minorities. And I always question, well, what does... how does this affect your thinking? You know, what thoughts, what philosophies, what ideologies do we carry that will die with us that may not get spread to the new immigrants, new people coming? And certainly people of, let's say, for example, just pick one, the Islamic faith. You know, are they going to buy into all my Timothy Leary shit and the freedom to say fucking well what you goddamn fucking well want to say? You know, or are they going to say, whoa, peace be upon them, let's not use bad language or drink alcohol or party all night and let girls go around in short skirts, because that ain't right. According to some guy a fucking 1,000 years ago, Jesus fucking Christ. You can say that one. You see, I can't say the same about that other guy, you know. Anyway, yes, I did get a little sidetracked there. I see signs of hope, and this is the wonderful thing. When I teach in my class, and I've got such a mix of people in my class, and I've started this wonderful little project that they just send me a little, you know, every week a little question. My last question to them was, what does it mean to be a Canadian? And I wish I had the passage in front of me. I deliberately saved it. But I'll put down what she said, that Canadians are, you know, the land is beautiful, and Canadians are kind. And then she said, but what I especially like is in the mornings, Canadians greet each other. They say hello. And not only that, when they're out walking their dogs, they call the dogs boy and girl, and they share. They talk to each other, and they walk. Neighbors walk with neighbors with their dogs. Oh, that's another nice observation. And they love coffee. And they like to sleep in on the weekend because they like to party Friday night. And this is from a very mild-mannered, you'd almost say typical Asian student. And I thought, what wonderful observations he made about Canadians. They like dogs, they're friendly, and they say hello in the morning. They drink lots of coffee, and they like to sleep in on the weekends. They're a little bit lazy. And she didn't say lazy. I'm saying lazy. It was a beautiful, beautiful description. It made me so happy that, okay, she gets it. She's here. And for all the shit that's going on all over the fucking world, the people who do come here do realize, holy fuck, I've landed in the promised land. This Canada is a great place. It truly is. Oh my God, I've gone on, and I don't even think I've begun to touch on the things that I wanted to talk about. I did another mediation last night. The one wonderful thing about doing these mediations, they're not mediations, Youth Justice Committee it's called, where you sit in a circle and bring in people who have gotten in trouble with the law. They've been arrested, and you want to have that criminal record go away, and you've got to find an alternative approach to problem solving, and it might be restitution if there is damage involved, or it might be, it's always a letter of apology to whoever we choose deserves that letter, community service, always counseling, and very often some other, maybe a training program or something that might help the youth on his way, because heaven forbid, youth do stupid things. And it's been an amazing experience. Like, I sit across and, boy, you probe deeply. You get into that kid's head. Kids 14 to 17. And what a rich experience it is to see and understand what's it like. What do you do in your spare time? Who do you hang out with? And it's not nosy questions. It's trying to say, well, what path is this kid on? Where is he likely to end up? And, you know, bigger question, is he likely to offend again, or is this the chance that we've given him to turn around and say, man, I don't want to do that again? It's a worthwhile thing, and I think it makes me reflect so much more deeply on my own children and who they are and what they've been through. And I should add at this point, I probably haven't on this podcast, I don't know, but my own son went through this program. He was caught entering an abandoned building with a couple of friends. They did no damage. Two guys, two girls. They thought, this would be cool. Maybe it's haunted. Let's go in. They found an opening. They went in. Somebody called the police. Police picked them up at the bus stop. Next thing you know, they're in handcuffs. They're in cells. They're being interrogated. Parents are called in. Holy fuck, you got charges. You're going up before a judge. And this program was there. My own son, my oldest son. Now, I guess, yeah, the point I wanted to make was that, damn it all, you know, when I was a kid, you went into an abandoned house, nobody's going to call the police. They might call the police. The police aren't going to arrest you and put up charges, you know. Now, in the end of the process, if you meet all the community needs, my son ended up doing some helping a cook at a community center and so on, and did his time, and then you go before the judge and say, bam, case closed, you know, you're fine, you're free to go, thank you. It's wonderful. But in the old days, you wouldn't have to go through this court system now. And it's, you know, you understand, you got a kid out there with a gun, and the robberies and the violent crimes and the rapes, the things that are going on. Yeah, man, stomp on this fast, because this is dangerous. But the usual, I think back, man, Friday night we'd be bored, we'd go pick crab apples out of somebody's tree and toss them at the bus on the Lakeshore Road in Dorval. Like, bam, got the fucking front windshield. Now, man, you know, the police, you know, somebody, the driver would report it, and there were police around, and you'd run and hide in the park, and you'd do stuff. Our biggest fun was going to the Dorval Garden Shopping Center and taking the shopping carts and having races with them. You put a guy in. Oh, no, I don't want to be inside. No, I'm going to push. You're getting inside. And it was the scariest fucking thing, because we'd just run like hell through this open parking lot with a little guy cramped up inside the cart. And you knew, the guy inside knew, you're always going to let it go or deliberately crash two of them together or something. Somebody's going to get hurt. The thing's going to tip over. Somebody's going to fall out at high speed. That was a thrill. That was fun. But, hey, same shit. Now, the other big thrill we did was to get on the roof of the shopping center. Well, that was an adventure. How do the people get up? Well, if you go back to, was it Steinberg's or whatever the grocery store was, you could find that ladder outside the shipping gate, and that ladder would get you to the roof. And apparently, I guess we tripped off an alarm or something. I wouldn't even imagine back then in 1964 they would have had alarms on shopping center roofs, but apparently they did. And of course, the police caught us, and you know, you get a little lecture, and that's it. But now everything is so much more serious, and so we're pretty forgiving of the people who just do something stupid. A little harder on the ones who it's deliberate theft, intimidation, fighting, but a little bit of stupid vandalism. I'll do it again. Anyway, I guess that's it, man. Oh, man, I've exceeded my time limit, but I had a lot to tell you. And now I'm going to enjoy the rest of the walk on this beautiful, gorgeous fall day. And I hope if you're anywhere near where it's sunny, you have the sense to get the fuck out of your office or out of your house or basement or wherever you are and take in some of the glory and fresh air that we have plenty of in this wonderful country called Canada. Thank you very much, and talk to you later on. Bye for now.